This is Pivot Perspectives with Chris O'Byrne, the show that takes you around the world to share interviews with some of the most successful and relevant people on the planet. Hear their stories and get the most important business lessons they've learned on their road to success, and get exclusive access on how to implement their success into your life and business. Pivot Perspectives is brought to you by the Strategic Advisor Board and your host, Chris O'Byrne.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks. Appreciate it.
So I'd like to start back, and in your case, it's really relevant. I usually have people go back to some point in childhood and talk about an event that was important to who they became. But I'd say your childhood in general was very significant and how you became who you are today. So could you kind of take us through that story?
Yeah. You know, I was born in a refugee camp, 10 kilometers off the border of Laos and Thailand, northern Thailand. The camp itself was named Vinai, which it translates to the word virtue. So a lot of, if you go into northern Laos, or if you even go to Laos, you see a lot of Bon, you know, like Bon, whatever, Bon. So Bon is town of or village of. So it's the village of virtue. And that was the name of the refugee camp. From 1975 to 1992, Vinai, or sometimes people call it Bon Vinai, Vinai held, had about 90,000 refugees from the, quote unquote, Vietnam War, in, you know, northern Laos that was going on. About 90,000 refugees came through there. And out of that 90,000, 90% of them were Hmong. And out of the 90%, majority of them ended up here in the Midwest, you know, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And then I'm in Minneapolis, where the Twin Cities area here has the largest dense concentration of Hmong people. So there's about 75,000 in the metro area up here of Hmong people. And so, yeah, so we were, my parents met in 77 in the camp. They got married in 78. And then in 88, we came to America, and I landed, our family first landed in Eastside St. Paul. And then from then we kind of moved out east, and we went to Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and ended up growing up with Mennonite Amish folks. There's a small group of Southeast Asian people around that area. And then middle school years, I came back to central Wisconsin, and finished out my high school years in central Wisconsin, a little town called Port Edwards. And then I ended up going to school at UW La Crosse. I never grew up in kind of this metropolitan type where there was a lot of different diversity. It was predominantly white. You know, I grew up like fishing, hunting, doing all these things where it's just like, I'm a Wisconsin boy, right? Like, give me a, you know, double cheeseburger from Culver's and some cheese curds and some, like, custard, not ice cream, custard, right? And, like, I call it a day. Like, that, you know, I love that. You know, I love myself a frozen pizza, you know, and that's how I grew up. And I just thought that's how normal every kid normally grows up. But as I got older, realized that, you know, the simplicities of life when you're a child to when you're older, especially as an adult, and the wading through, especially the identity of, like, where you stand as, you know, like, are you Hmong or are you American? Mm-hmm. That became a huge question, especially growing up in central Wisconsin, where there were a lot of just biased views of Hmong people, among the group of, you know, white friends I grew up with and stuff like that. And so, yeah, so there was just, you know, growing up in high school, you kind of had this identity issue. And basically it was you adapt, you assimilate, or you're the weird kid. So as much as I'm 100% Hmong, my parents don't speak English. I speak Hmong. I speak, you know, English. I learned really quick in high school. It's like, you know, join sports, you know, played football, powerlifting, you know, join, you know, extracurricular activities along the lines of like, hey, like the school play, join the choir, you know, like an all-American kid. Right. And that's what I did to make it through high school. And then just say, hey, getting out of these small towns, college is my, you know, my key to get out.
Yeah.
That was the thing. Like, go to college. And, you know, and that was, yeah. And that's, I had some very incredible teachers. in Port Orford, Wisconsin, who dedicated their life to making sure that they saw potential. I didn't even know what the word potential meant, but they saw potential, and they would always encourage me, like, leave this town in the nicest, sweetest way. Leave this town. And so, I'm very thankful for that. But I think that if there was a this pivoting moment of me growing up, it was that when two teachers, Mr. Miller and Ms. B, who was my Spanish teacher, Mr. Miller was my history teacher, also my JV football coach, and they're like, go, you gotta go. And I'm like, wait, no, I wanted, like, I could go to UWC in Sporn, or I could go to wherever, and like, just like, this is my comfort zone. And they're like, you gotta get out of here, man. You're bigger. Like, something bigger is out there for you. I didn't even know what that meant. Like, okay, I guess. Yeah. And so, yeah, and just growing up, that you would just say, you straddle b both worlds.
So how did you balance that? And
Oh.
not just as a kid, but as you're
Yeah.
getting older and you're going to college, then you're working, and I mean, that had to be a big part of your life, and probably still is.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you're a kid growing up, you just don't know better. So, so for example, growing up in elementary school, when the kids come and they look at your face and they open your eyes up, they pry your eyes open and they go, "Hey, can you see better?" I see, think so, yeah, and but not knowing that, no, that's not right. Like, they shouldn't do that, or just like different names you were called. You're just like, you laughed along with your friends because it's like, well, I'd rather feel like I'm being laughed with, not laughed at. So you just deal with it, you just push it down. And then as in high school, it's just like, just don't be the weird kid. Don't be, the weird kid. Just do exactly. I mean, that I think the thing about my dad said to us when we were kids was like, growing up, there he's like, I want you guys to learn English very well. I don't want you to speak with an accent, because my dad said, because when you're out there in the real world, because he gave me real world life stuff. When you're out there in the real world, and someone's gonna hire you, they're gonna hire the guy, the person who doesn't have an accent. They're gonna hire the person who dressed like them. So dad at a young age realized that the world's not fair. He fought a war. He saw people die. He saw people, innocent bystanders, just get slaughtered. Life's he and really quickly he taught us life's not fair. You can do everything right, and at the end of the day, you're still not going to win. But then he prepared us for this. And that's a lesson I'll never forget.
Smart.
Yeah, and but he wasn't. He didn't give us false hopes of, oh, if you try really hard, you're going to make everything. He goes, sometimes you try really hard, and it just doesn't work out. And I don't know how to explain that. You do the right thing. You fight for, for him, it was like he did the right thing. He fought for his country. He fought for a country that promised him that no matter what happens, we'll take care of you. You can be citizens in our world. And then that country left him. Then he had to fight to get out of the country that was in war. And then he was hunted down like animals with the other, with the opposing force. And then, he saw people get killed. He saw horrific things in war, and he joined up with the local militia to fight for the Americans at age 12. So
Oh my gosh.
from 12 years old to 30, that's what he did. And then he brought us to America, and he did everything right, right? Like he did everything right. And still, when he came to America, people would yell at us, make fun of us. And people would say, go back to your country, not knowing that he fought for the country that they're living in. And so he really knew, like, life's not fair, but that doesn't mean we quit. And so, yeah, that was, I mean, he instilled that into us at a young age. And I didn't, I that wasn't my aha moment until like 10 years ago. It's like,
So
why
he
don't I?
really taught you resilience.
Yeah, and it's his. Like, I lived off of that spirit of his resilience. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I know not to quit. It's like, I at one point I'm like, am I just dumb? Like, especially in the food world, like, am I just dumb? Am I just dumb not knowing? Like, every year I go back to it. Every year I go back to it, and I'm like, oh no, I am my father's son. Like, quitting is not in his blood, and that's exactly, I would say that these are those, if you want to talk about pivot moments for me, where it's like, oh, I am my father's son, or I am like my mother. Like, everything good about mom and dad has been instilled in me. and that it is not about me, but I am an echo. I am a reflection of them. And that's what I love talking to people about.
I like that. So you, and that resilience, that determination, man, when you're in the food business, it is not an easy business. You, how did you graduate in communications from La Crosse end up as a chef?
I'm not a very academic person, and I think that a lot of people in the food world isn't, but it's just we learn different, right? It took me a while because mom and dad wanted us this like classical, quote unquote, classical American education, right? English, literature, math, blah blah blah, all this stuff. I was just never good at it. And not because like I didn't like pay attention or I was just like goofing around. It was just like writing papers for me just took longer. And I'm just like, am I just dumb? Like I don't get it. Or like reading comprehension just takes me a while. I'm like, but if I did activities like, with my hands, like that's why like I worked well in like woods class or any kind of class where it's just like, like quote unquote home ec or, now it's called FACE or family consumer
Oh,
education or
yeah.
whatever, Yeah, I don't know the name for it. But like anytime I worked with my hands, I understood. Like even being in like gym class and like playing different sports where it's a movement where it's not like you're sitting there and you're just reading it. Like so I understand things better if I touch it, feel it first, and go, oh, this is how it breaks down. Which is super interesting because that's the same thing my father is, as a woodworker and as a welder. Like he doesn't Like he's not the dude who like knows measurements and all that stuff. Like he'll take a string and he'll pull the string out and measure what it needs to be so he knows how long the string is, and then he'll just build a table that way. And he did that. I mean, like that's what he did. He worked as, he built homes and built kitchen cabinets. That's what he did. But he can reverse engineer a table by just looking at it in his mind and then put it together and then build one together. Like that's just the way he did. But could he write you a detailed report on how to do it? Probably not. And I find myself like that too, where I like the thing was like people are like, hey, write us a recipe. I'm like, okay. That I'm like, And that's why a lot of times, our communications director, Lauren, would always be like, oh, hey, just how about you just talk it out to me and I'll write it out. So I'll literally sit there or with my manager Gates and she's like, look, just it's going to be easier if we spend 15 minutes and you just tell me what's all in it and then I'll write it out and I'll fluff it up. And they do it. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Like instead of me there for an hour going duck, 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 click, click.
Yes.
And so in school, I just thought Yale's dumb. He doesn't know anything, but I always excelled in understanding foods, especially where it's like, I love this idea. It's like a puzzle in my head. Like, oh, we have all these raw ingredients. Like, how do we put them together? And then, like, what can we do? And I'm also this dude who's like, if I'm thinking about something, like, I'll dork out about it for a long time in my head. Like, for example, I was out in New York last week, and I had this super delicious, Korean beef soup. Where it was just like with the long rib beef, and in the moment you hit that broth hits your mouth, it is the richest, most delicious, also very light, like beef flavor. And it's like this is what beef is supposed to taste like. It's not supposed to be some kind of whatsoever. And I can't stop thinking about it. And so, like yesterday, I literally was just I went and got some long ribs. Like I braised it. I was like tasting. I'm like, okay, it's not there yet. It's not there yet. And I'm just dorking out. I'm just thinking about it constantly. Like for the last like 3 days, I just keep thinking about it, right? And to the point where it's like I got to do this. So then I can touch it, feel it, know how to do it. Well, I wasn't good at school at all, but like in college, I finally I went to college, left college, cooked for a while, came back to finish off because I knew how important it was for my father to make sure that all his kids had a college education. And I mean, that's the whole like, aha moment where they're like, oh, yeah, this means a lot to them. This is for them, this means a lot. So I then was like, okay, I come back, finish college. I never wanted to be cook, hated cooking because I was like, oh, this is so lame.
Oh, wow.
I tell people like that was never the plan. I thought I was a young idealistic punk, so I thought you can save the world through nonprofit work, and finding out the nonprofit work actually doesn't pay the bills, as much as it's super cool and nice and get a pat on the back and a nice gold star. And so what I would have to do is I would cook in kitchens, and it would cooking in kitchens would have been was like, oh yeah, but like one day when I get a real job, blah 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 blah. And there was this moment where I just go, if I'm really like I'm really loving this, but I don't know why I'm loving it. It's like the I tell people it's kind of like that blind date you go on, and at the end you're like, nyeh, but then you're like, yeah, let's go on another one. And then eventually, like, then you're like 15 years in, you're like, I guess we're in love, but that was it. And then for me, it was very important to figure out my why. Anything I want to do, I want to know my why. Like, when I think about what is the hardest moment you're in, what is the time where you're like, nothing makes sense. You're looking at your P&Ls, and you're looking at all, you're looking at your food costs, your COGS, everything. And you're just like, this makes no sense. Like, why am I doing this? Like, then you ha there has to be that next level of why. And for me, it was very simple when I understood mom and dad's story, and I was able to see their life from this bird's eye view instead of being like, oh, they're my mom and dad. They just complain to me about stuff, blah, 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 blah. But to really see what happens when two people make a decision to say, we're going to live our life fully for something bigger than ourselves. And then for me, the question is, well, how do you honor that? And so, yeah, so it's for the last 7 years, it's just been like nose to the grind, and going get through the pandemic is
Yeah.
probably one of the hardest things, getting through the pandemic. But my mom would say, this too shall pass. That's what she would say. She's like, I know it's tough, honey, I know it's hard, but your father and I came from much worse, so this will pass. So when you talk to people who have gone through a lot of stuff, and I mean like heavy stuff, gone through a war, and they can stand on the other end and goes, it's okay, like this pain, it'll be over. And it gave me a lot of perspective, and so that was a lot of that helped us through the pandemic. And yeah, so that's pretty much it.
So as you got into cooking, you when did you start out right away like, I want to honor my heritage, I want to, cook
No,
Hmong cuisine? I didn't think so.
no, I
So
started like literally. Started like an Italian place, Tex-Mex. I never wanted to cook Asian food, let alone Hmong food, because it's so embarrassing to explain to people, right? And so it's funny because like today people would be like, because we have a little place, a little stall at the US Bank Stadium, at the Viking Stadium. And people are like, and we have a burger on the menu, and they're like, wait, you guys can make burgers? You know how to make burgers? And I'm like, yeah, at the end of the day, I'm still a cook. You guys realize that, right? Like there's, Chris, we always get this thing where it's like, oh, you make stuff other than like rice and sausage and grill. Yeah. Again, like I tell you, I'm a Wisconsin boy. You got that smash burger from Culver's, and you got like the butter burger, like, yeah, you guys, like I'm still a cook. Like I just, like we always get that where they're like, oh, you guys like make this, and they're like, yeah, I know how to do it. And like I like when we do like when I do pasta or something, people are like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah. I grew up at a cooking for I was doing carbonara, and they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, I grew up cooking at an Italian restaurant. Grew up doing Tex-Mex, like barbecuing, grilling, like that's my jam, and so it just sometimes people are just all like, oh yeah, I forget. I'm like, yeah, like like grew up not cooking Hmong food, I mean, I ate it and stuff like that, but it is the fallback for me because it's so special in my heart, but so we always joke about that. I'm like, we should just surprise her when I make tacos or something.
So, did you at some point go back to your mom and say, teach me how to cook this stuff?
Like it's always been a part of me where like cooking is always been a part of me, especially growing up cooking in a household, Hmong household. I knew these dishes, but for me it was finding the story behind the dishes that was very important, because I believe like when people go, oh, when you eat something, you're like, oh, this food feels soulless. What I really believe that means is like there's no soul into it. There's no story behind it. It's just food, like to be completely honest, like okay, so I love Quick Trip. Quick Trip's my jam. Like I grew up in La Crosse. That's the home of Quick Trip. The owners of
Oh
Quick
yeah.
Trips are from there. Yeah. And I love talking about going to Quick Trip, getting different, you know, sandwiches at Quick Trip, and people go, "Oh, gross." But I'm like, for me, that's such a huge thing, because going back and forth from college, driving from La Crosse to, you know, to Port Edwards, from back and forth to college, a $1.99 sandwiches saved me. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So you can make fun of me all you want, but to me, it's not about this, like, you know, processed meat barbecue sandwich. Absolutely not. It's about these moments where I've driven through there and it's like, dude, I really have $5. That's all I have. You know, and like it got me on the 2.5 hour drive from college back home, where then when I was like, if I can make it home, if I can make it to my mom's house, I can eat like a king. But I'm so starving right now. I got $5 in my wallet. You know, but doesn't that story just like entice
you?
Oh yeah, like that quote unquote barbecue sandwich at, you know, or the barbecue rib sandwich at Quick Trip tastes so much different now. That's what stories do. And for me, yeah, it was like, that's what brings soul into food. And like, you know, braised Hmong mustard green with pork neck bones. I mean, that is simple mountains of Laos food, which is probably not going to win a Michelin award. It's not going to win whatever, but I don't give a turd, because you talk to any Hmong kid about it, you know, with the little rice and a little quetzal or pepper sauce, they're going to go
for food.
Oh, absolutely. So our heart was, and the plan was, then how do we take that, right? How do we take that, and how do we use that, how do we tell that story to people joining and eating with us? And so that's kind of what we did. And don't get me wrong, like, there's still the old school Hmong food that I'll eat. And don't get me wrong, like, I'll throw down and we'll make it. But on the other end too, here is the canvas. And we have to contextualize, you know, here's a canvas we get to paint on. Now we have to contextualize it to people who aren't from our world. So we're, instead of people coming into our world, we're going to have to show our world to them. And that has been one of the greatest things ever. Because as a Hmong kid growing up, we were always wondering, hey, I want to be invited. And at the end of the day, we didn't get an invitation. I mean, I was the kid who didn't get invited to the birthday parties. And I would always be like, man, am I weird? And it would be sad. But at the end of the day, you know, I think my mother and my father taught us where it's like, if you're not invited to the table, yeah, there's no problem you building the table and people will come, because there are other people out there that knows what it's like not to be invited. So build your table and invite others in. So rather than sitting here and goes, well, life's not fair. You know, life's not fair. Like, we're just a bunch of refugees, blah, blah, blah. Instead of that, going, hey, for the last 7 years, we've been able to build a really incredible table on the backs of, you know, our ancestors, on the backs of our mothers and fathers who have gone before us. And to keep that table for ourselves would be as foolish as the others who have kept the tables for themselves. And that's why we firmly believe that. And I tell people is, you know, people ask, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, it sounds super cheesy, but I want to be a master storyteller, telling the stories of the unsung. And where it's going to start with my own people, the Hmong people. And we're going to use that story to gather all peoples together. One of the most
very poetic.
Thank you. One of the most incredible moments I've had in my life was my mom and dad did this dinner at our restaurant, and we did it like we just basically said, hey, we're doing old school. There's no menu. It's whatever mom and dad wants to cook. 50 people came, you know, and we, you know, we charged like $150. A bunch of the money went to this charity of thing we're doing. We're building schools in Laos for Hmong kids. And all these people showed up, and my mom first was blown away. She goes, wait, why are people paying this much to eat this food? Because I can make it for them at the house. And I'm like, mom, it's for the first time she just saw, well, this is peasant food. Why would you pay this much? And I'm like, mom, her mom and dad finally realized. And then in a way they're like, wait, so I wanted to show them what you offer is priceless. That $150 per person is, should be the beginning, because we're willing to go to these Eurocentric, you know, restaurants and drop $150 just so that you can have, you know, this and this shaved whatever and A5 Wagyu, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. You're paying for the product. You're not paying for the story. You know, you're not being a part of the story. So that was incredible. The other thing was, sitting on the table was one of my good friend, big chef up here, Gustavo Romero. He's Mexican. He has an incredible Mexican restaurant. And he's eating mom and dad's dishes, right? At this table. And I, stop by. I'm like, hey, what's up, bro? And we start talking. And he goes, dude, when I'm eating the food from your mom and dad, monk food, not Mexican food, monk food, he goes, it takes me back sitting at my abuela's table back in Mexico City, and I feel like I'm at her house. So how crazy is that? That you're eating monk food, but inside, personally, everybody feels that comfort of wherever they came from. If it's from Ukraine, Syria, Mexico, whatever. But it started with monk food. So that's what I mean. I want to dig deep into the stories of the unsung. And we want to first use, want to use the Hmong story, the Hmong, it doesn't end with the Hmong people. It starts with the Hmong people. Mom always said, V9, the new restaurant we're building out, named after the refugee camp. Mom, this is what mom said to us. V9 is not where our story ends. It's actually where our story started. And so, like, for me, like this, I mean, you get it, man. This kid from central Wisconsin, from Podunk, Port Edwards. I mean, you've driven through that town. Like, no knock on the town.
Many times.
Yeah, under 2,000 people. That I get to do some of the most incredible things that I never would have imagined. And I had this moment where, last week we were on Good Morning America, and I was, we were filming on Good Morning America doing this thing, and I had this aha moment when I'm walking through Midtown New York City there in Manhattan, and I'm like, if you would have told me 20 years ago, hey dude, one day you're gonna be here, because for me, I was that kid who was sneaking into the Y at like my sophomore year of college, high school. I didn't have a Y pass, so there was a door that was always open in the back, so I would sneak in right to the Y so that we can work out. And I would literally sit there and watch on the monitors Good Morning America, and I was like, oh great, Good Morning America, whatever. Not knowing that if you had told that kid 20 some years later, hey bro, 22 years later, hey bro, you're gonna be on that show. I'm like, whatever. And so I tell people, we get to use our story, we get to use mom and dad's story, we get to be a part of it, to tell the story of others, using it as a conduit into the souls and hearts of people while cooking food and using food as a vessel of telling stories. So I don't know. I mean, that's what I think about a lot. That's the stuff that runs through my heart. At the end of the day, again, like simple hanging fruit. Yeah. Like the low hanging fruit stuff. It's like, yeah, like we get to cook. It's awesome. Delicious food. Everyone's super excited. But if you're willing to be curious enough, dig in deeper into what we are trying to do. So it's all the shows that we've been a part of, being meticulous about events and shows that we're a part of to be able to tell our story and using that as a way to dig into other people to see, hey, what's the story inside you? What's that feel inside of you too?
Let's go into, that's a good segue into your story and especially the influence that you have now, because you've really grown your influence, and not just social media, but Good Morning America, Iron Chef, so many different things. Tell me about some of the highlights for you of those. Like, how did you get to be on Good Morning America? How did you get to be on Iron Chef?
Yeah, I think that it's just a kind of a slow grind. Like when people, I'm always a firm believer of, especially with the Hmong people, is like not many people know who the Hmong people are. We always get categorized as Lao or Thai or even Chinese. And so, I make every opportunity that I get. So it literally for me, the TV thing wasn't the thing for me. It was like, I just want to be cook. At the end of the day, I'm a cook, dude. Like, start a fire, throw some meat on it. And also, at the end of the day, I'm like an outdoorsy Wisconsin boy who wants just to cook outside. Like, freaking get me on a lake. We're gonna fish some walleyes or whatever, get some panfish, start a fire, and let's just cook some fish. Or get some northerns out there and or just go wrestle up some catfish. Like that's my jam. Like I love that stuff. But now I found out that oh, I can still love that stuff and like make fun TV shows with it too, So like that's kind of fun. But on the other end too, like, I just really realized that every opportunity I get, I want to make the most of it. So even if it's like a little corner of the stage, I'm like, yeah, we'll take the corner of the stage. Like, we're, you know, I'm not going to sit here. And, you know, and I just feel very blessed to be able to, you know, do these different things. But I, you know, I think it's the attitude, you know, my father gave us this attitude of like, you know, be smart, be curious, be quiet, be wise. And when they're least expecting, like, show them what you're made of. You know, it's kind of, that's what the dad always instilled inside of. And I think that's been a big part of my life, you know. Sometimes, so it's like, okay, like when you get this opportunity, you know, really work on it, you know? And I don't ever see like anybody from, yeah, I think from all the interviews we've had from different publication, regardless of how big or small, or I get it, dude, we started out as a pop-up with a 10 by 10 pop-up tent in my old RAV4 that had 300,000 miles. And we hopped from like brewery to brewery and like, you know, little parking lots. Do you know what I'm saying? Grilling chicken sticks on a little grill with sticky rice and some, you know, pepper sauce. Like, we did that. So then when I, you know, like, you know, yesterday I had a young lady who just graduated NYU and she's, you know, part of this little publication and she's like, wants to set up a little interview. And I'm like, for sure. I get that. I'm a small town Wisconsin kid, right, Chris? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I get that you have to start somewhere. So it's like, it's not like, oh, I'm waiting for, you know, the big interview with Today Show or blah, blah, blah. No, man. Like, if that happens, great. But I get the fact that you have to start somewhere. And you know, and so for me, it's like 30 minutes. That's not much. 45 minutes, whatever. Like, dude, I'm down for it, you know? And so, and I get excited too, talking about that. Cause again, like, I will always be that Wisconsin kid, you know? On top of all of that, man, like, we've been, everything that we've done, I've also thought about it in a way where I just want to be good at whatever I do. So like literally starting TV, I was horrible. I had a producer who believed in me and said, dude, no matter what happened, her name's Danny. And Danny, was part of a startup that they were making, like a kit box, you know, for two. And it's kind of like during that HelloFresh, when HelloFresh was starting type thing. So they had a local one called Local Crate here, where it's all Minnesota. And they're like, could you help as one of our chefs to design a box for us? I'm like, oh, sure, cool. This is way in the beginning. And they were a startup. We were a startup. And Danny would say, hey, we need to do these videos of you cooking. And I'm horrible. Like, my head's down. I'm just chopping. I'm like, I don't know. He's like, what are you doing with the carrots? I'm like, climb in the sticks. Come on, man. Figure it out, you know? And then Danny, who also has a cooking background, goes, hey, pretend we don't know anything about cooking and just talk to me. I was like, okay. And it was like one camera, like their camera, you know, JJ was the camera guy. And then Danny was there and Danny's like, okay, talk me through it. And literally it was through that. And she goes, okay, now smile. And I'm like, you know, and if you see some of these videos now, I think they're still on YouTube. If you see something, this is very embarrassing. But it started there. And then, you know, like one place got a wind of it and they're like, oh wait, like you know, you look very natural. I'm like, I don't feel natural in there. JJ was a great editor, made it look natural. And then eventually it was like, hey, can we try this? And then there's a, you know, PBS here came and said, hey, we got the show. We love for you to host. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Like, I can do one show. They're like, no. It's like a 6-episode online series. Okay, cool. And then, oh, by the way, they want another one. They want 6 more, you know, they order some more, you know? And then it was like another production company came and, you know, and again, if you play the role of the naive little, you know, kid from Wisconsin, you're like, oh, I don't know. And, you know, these producers are like, oh, he's so cute, you know. But, you know, I'm like, I'm not dumb inside. I'm still like, yeah, like, this is who I am. This isn't an act. This is who I am. But at the end of the day, too, like, I'm not going to sit here and try, you know, to be anybody else, you know. And that was, yeah. And then we get a chance to keep telling our story wherever platform we get, you know. Like, I tell people, I get to travel the country, go out into the wild in the woods with a bunch of people, to be very honest, with a bunch of people who never heard of who Hmong people were. And I spend 2 days with them. We go hunting, we cook together, and we end up talking about our people, our culture. We end up talking about, you know, the things that excite us, the things that break our hearts. We get to connect and we have this fun adventure cooking and we have this fun adventure hunting and fishing together and just make some really incredible friends around the country.
So how much of your time is spent doing those outward facing activities.
Yeah, I know. I always get asked that. So I always tell our team 10 to 12 weeks a year. If you add them all together, that's what, about 10 to 12 weeks a year.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, no, it's not. I think, social media's perception. I think that people see, I was trying to explain to somebody because, season two of Pharaoh right now is rolling. And so people are like, oh, wait, so, how are you still cooking if you're out there, shooting ducks in, Yellowstone? And I'm like, yeah, that was like filmed a year ago. So I have to like explain to people, like, I think in the world of TikTok and instant media, people are thinking, oh, you did that last week. It's like, no, that was about a year ago. And that was like, filmed a year ago. And, also too, I have two incredible, director of operations and executive sous chef here that they are incredible. And that's the thing. Is finding people to align with the vision that you want to do and saying, hey, I'm going to go do this, but all three of us, we're still going to be hip to hip no matter what happens. No matter if I'm in New York doing something or no matter if I'm out in Washington State doing something. Like every morning, I'm still going to text you guys. And the thing that we always text each other, which I love, which I learned from our operations guy, Trevor, the first thing he always says to me every time he sees me in the kitchen is like, hey, chef, how are you doing? How can I support you today? That's
Oh,
if the people
man.
that work around you, if that's the first question they ask you, how can I support you today? I mean, it changes the game, doesn't it? Where you're like, oh wow, I don't come in going, oh my gosh, what's the mess? You come in going, wow, I feel super supported. And it's the same thing with our one of our chefs, Timmy, our executive sous. I was just hey Timmy, how can we support you today? And all three of us, we have this little Slack chain that we talk every morning. Good morning. Hey chefs, here's what I'm doing. Okay, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm doing. How can I support you? How can I support you? How do you feel supported in this way? I can take my time, eat my sandwich in the car here, have a conversation with you, and know that, hey, we got everything figured out. If something does come up, hey, and the thing that I love doing the most is like, hey, they're like, hey, we need a run to go get, we're out of these kinds of noodles. I got it. I'll go take the run. I don't feel like, oh, am I doing this again? And it's like, nah, man. Like I'm excited. I'll take the run. I'll go get it because it's this thing that we've really worked hard with our team to be like, instead of coming in and feeling like, oh my gosh, like this is a mess, it's I'm coming in to be supported. So it's a culture thing that we've had to work on for years and years and years. And to truly believe that is truly to say, how can I support you today? Figuring out a way to support each other and accepting that I'm being supported by all the team around me. So
Do you do a lot of experimenting in your cooking menus, venues even? Do you still do pop-ups?
Yeah, I love doing pop-ups, but our team is like, hey man, we have all these other operations going on, so us doing pop-ups is gonna pull from those operations, right? So once in a while, I'll do it secretly without telling them, but they're like, dude, what's going on? And so as long as logistically it makes sense in the things that we do, because at the end of the day, we're a business too, right? So if you keep throwing pop-ups in there, the point is to get out of pop-ups. That's what I tell people. I think pop-ups are fun for people to come to and they're like, oh my gosh, this is fun and sexy. It's like, it's horrible. It's like pop-ups, and I'm not a parent. I'm a single dude. So, but my siblings, they all have kids and a bunch of nieces and nephew. And you know how I'm not sure if you're a parent or, you have kids,
Oh,
but
yeah.
like, oh yeah. So like growing up, right? Like, when your kids are, I figure your kids, are a little older now, but when they're younger and you and your wife have this like system of like getting them up, putting them, getting them fed, getting them dressed and everything, put them on the bus or drive them to school and all the time. It's a system, right? And it's like the parents are like, no, we don't mess with the system because then there's control chaos. Pop-ups are like, imagine you doing that, and then like the fun uncles just jumps in and goes, what's up guys? Hey, like, yeah. And you're like, bro, you're totally messing up our system. Like, we need to get them out the door by 7, whatever, so they can go to school. Well, that's what pop-ups are to my team, I found out. Where I'm like, guys, this is so cool. We can do this, we can do this. And they're like, but then we have to staff it. How are we gonna staff that? I don't know, you guys figure it out. And what it shows that I'm actually not respecting and supporting them. So what I do is I create more stress to them, but I'm like the fun uncle. And when the mess happens, I just leave. I'm like, okay, clean up, guys. I'm out. So
again, man.
I love pop-ups, but I have to make them work within this world where we create, we're in the system where we create all these other people that are working with us, all these people that are part of our team to say, I value you. I respect you. You know, Caroline, who is our, you know, she's does guest services slash, you know, special events. She's our director of that, you know, and she's from an education mindset. So she's super organized. She's like a teacher. She's super organized. The moment I change something up on her, she can flow with it. But if I don't loop her in and I'm like, oh yeah, by the way, we're doing that now. She then feels like, okay, I need you to respect me to loop me in on that. So, and if there ain't change that comes up, we can take it as together, but as long as we are together, you know? And so that's what I've learned. And I think that people love coming to pop-ups and they think it's great. Consumers, you know, diners. Yeah. But there's a lot of work that has to be done to get to where we want to be. So that's, and again, I still love doing them. But I have to understand that doing pop-ups back in the day when it was just me and my cousin Chris is completely different with a staff of 20 now. Because decision you make echoes and affects 20 different people. Back in the day, you know, I mean, again, like I tell people, it's like being single, right? I can do whatever. I can go, you know, YOLO, like run around, you know, drink coffee, stay up late, blah, blah, blah. And it's like your body in the morning, you're like, ugh. But now, like, if you're a parent, it's like you do that. Then you have all the kids, your wife, your and all the other systems that you have in place. Now you just wrecked all of that. So I really learned, like, oh yeah, like I really want, you know, what I really want to do is I want to make sure that when I say, hey, how can I support you, that they feel supported. That it's just not a word I'm saying to them. So again, I still love the creativity. We have a lot of creativity. Actually, now I have more creativity, you know, more time to be creative, you know. And I've even said, hey, guys, I feel like I've been like, so Mondays and Tuesdays are my admin days. I take a lot of my meetings on Mondays and Tuesdays, you know. Why? Because one of our locations closed on Monday and Tuesday. So it's a little lower actual doing, you know. I love going to our food hall where we have our noodle shop. You know, our noodle shop right now. I love going there and just, you know, saying hi and then portioning noodles. So I'm there just literally portioning noodles and saying hi and talking to the team. You know, I love being, you know, so I'm more versatile and I have it on my schedule. Everybody knows, hey, you know, last week was like 5 days. I'm out to New York. We're doing this thing for Good Morning America, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. That's where we are. You are, you know, all our managers and leaders has, you know, they can click and see where my schedule is. So if it's like, hey, yeah, we really need to talk. I need to, you know, I need to have a connection and talk to you about this. Great. You go on there, put your name on my calendar, you know, where you want to talk and I'll be there. And then I show up. You got to show up. You know, and so these are things where it's like, it's cool to be, you know, like to shoot from the hips and be that wild guy. You know, I'm a Packer fan. So it's cool to be like, you know, Brett Favre, you know, the gunslinger. It's cool to be like that because it's like, man, you got a 50-50 shot here. Let's just see what's happening. It's awesome. But at the end of the day, where there is a protection, where you're protecting your people, you just can't be a gunslinger. You have to realize that, oh yeah, this, you know, we got some stuff going on here. And so, yeah, I mean, but again, in the end, we get to dork out about little things too, you know, where it's like, hey, we've been trying to work on this beef rib dish for a long time. And so we have different events that we do that we're like, oh, let's try it this way. Okay, let's try it this way. So we get to hone it down. Yeah. So like all these little events, all these little small pop-ups we do, you know, we get to try something and know that that dish is always in process. We don't have $500,000 a year dedicated to an R&D kitchen. We just don't. So we actually have to, you know, in process, change a couple of different things when we're making, you know, dishes. And so that's when we are like, okay, right. Like we'll do like three or four different iteration of a dish when we're like, okay, we got it. I think this is what we're looking for, you know?
So along the way, who are some of the key like mentors and influences on you?
Yeah. So one of them, I would, you know, I call him a mentor. I don't know if he would be like, I don't know if I was your mentor. I'm like, yeah, you were. Like, I looked up to him, you know, Alex Roberts. He's a chef from up here. James Beard award-winning chef, you know, well-known. He's got Alma, restaurant. He's also got their Alma Cafe, and then he owns Brasa, which is a fast casual, place that he has. There's like four of them, I think, or five of them. And so he's just well known. Alex Roberts has been one of those. I think that, he's one of those dudes that I could call and be like, hey man, or text me like, dude, I'm struggling to figure this other part out. And he's like, yeah, dude, let's grab coffee, let's talk. He has his little empire up here, and he's been really, really great to talk to. Any question I have, even like what does it mean to lease to buy for buildings and stuff like that. He just went through that process, so he can tell me about the, that pro, you know. So that definitely is one. I would say, man, I think another one that I really look up to, is it started out as a consultant. Then I, you know, then we met together and kind of do some personal one-on-one stuff. Is Carl. He owns this consulting group called Growing Edge, where they work with executive leaders in businesses and helping for team cohesion. And so we started out as he as you know he started out as a consultant, but he's such a great listener, and I learned from him is how to listen, especially how to listen to the people that are close to you, the people that are working with you, and yeah, and so those two have been so great in the last, say, 4 or 5 years of my life, Yeah, I mean, the obvious answer is like my parents, who I really look up to them, who, and yeah, I tell people they're my shoreline, they're my lighthouse. I'm never gonna like not be. But outside of them, I think, Carl
Those
and
two.
Alex have been really incredible.
So, as we wrap this up, what are some parting words of advice or valuable lessons that you have learned along the way?
Yeah, I think three things. One, be curious. Always be curious. When you don't know something, research it, look into it, and go deeper into what it is. It's easy. Like, we live in the world of 30-second attention spans, right? But for me, I'm just like, stop, dude. Like, there's something deeper into that, right? We also live in this world of like, it's not about the truth coming out. It's about who gets to say what is the truth first. And so that I think that we live in that world now where it's just like you see 30-second clip and you believe in whatever the person with the camera is saying, right? And so it's just like, no, be curious, dig in. So I would say be curious, and then what attaches to that is slow to make your conclusion. Or I would say be wise that how your conclusion, because it connects to that curiosity, right? Instead of being like, oh my gosh, like, did you see blah blah blah? It's like, no. Like, hear the full story, see what's happening on, And then I think the third thing that I would say to people is show up. When you say you're gonna show up, show up. Even in the little things in life, show up. That's we have a lot of younger people working for us, and that's been the hardest thing. Just not showing up. People always ask me what kind of what you know people ask me what kind of people you're looking for to work in the chef world, or sorry, in the restaurant world, whatever. What kind of people are you looking for? And I use the acronym FAT, right? FAT. Faithful, accountable, teachable. I'm looking for people that are faithful to the to you know to what we're doing. Accountable. When something goes wrong, they take accountability and say, hey, that was my bad. I take responsibility for that. Great. Let's talk through it. It's not a right or wrong thing. It's not like, oh, if you take accountability, it means you'll be punished. No. We have to take punishment and accountability. We got to separate those two words, because people always think accountability means I got to be punished. Right? Yeah. So, and then teachable. That's part of that curiosity. So I always think, that's what I think about, like, and that's what I tell people. We're looking for, faithful, accountable, teachable people. And for me, what does that all wrap up in? Showing up. You gotta show up. And so, man, it's the thing that we as leaders talk to ourselves about. I mean, I just had a conversation today with one of our, chefs. Dropped the ball on something, said, I'm so sorry. That was me. I dropped the ball. Great. That's awesome. Like, now we know and we address that. Let's move forward.
Perfect. Words of wisdom for sure. Now, people are going to listen to this. They're going to read this. They're going to want to know how to find out more about you and what you do. Where do you like to send them?
Feel like a seventh grader here, but well, if you want to follow us, I would just say our social media. I think that the biggest social media we have is Instagram. So at Union Hmong Kitchen, or at Yevang 70. That's my personal one, and then at V9MN, and that's where we have all our updates on what's going on in our restaurant world and even a little bit in the media world that we're part of.
Awesome. And I'll make sure everybody gets, there's links to those in the notes and follow up as well. So thank you so much for your time, Yi. This was just wonderful. I loved it.
Oh, thanks a lot, Chris. You know, it feels good to talk to a Wisconsin boy.
Oh man. Yep. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for listening to Pivot Perspectives with your host, Chris O'Byrne. Please leave your feedback and visit strategicadvisorboard.com to get the latest and greatest business advice on the planet. Follow us on social media for updates, and we will see you on the next episode.